I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and this is Dying to Ask the Road to Paris. Perfectly imperfect. That is the goal for a California sharpshooter aiming for gold in Paris.
When you look at it from the outside as a spectator, that's what it looks like. It's like you're trying to be perfect. But I have to realize that it's not a perfectionist sport. And I think that's one of the things that makes me so good at it.
Sergeant Sajan Maddalena is a two-time Olympic shooter. She grew up in a small mountain town called Groveland. Population, 540. She was homeschooled. One day she saw an ad for a 4-H gun safety class for kids. She went. She fell in love with a sport that apparently loved her back. It led to a University of Alaska Fairbanks collegiate career where she became an 8-time All-American in shooting. These days, Sergeant Maddalena is in the U.S. Army and part of the World Class Athlete Program. It allows members to train and compete in any sport on an international level while they're serving in the military. Paris will be Sajan's second Olympics, and she'll be competing in two events in air rifle in Paris. On this Dying to Ask, no one ever guesses Sajan's sport, the sport they think she does when they see her Olympic ring tattoo. The mental game is everything in air rifle. How Sajan trains her mind and how we can all get that kind of clarity. And she grew up in a small town, the inspiration that Sajan hopes she is for other kids who have big dreams while living in small places. Sajan Maddalena is on this week's Dying to Ask the Road to Paris podcast. Olympians. They're just different. Sure, they're fitter and faster, but they're mentally different too. Because when the body breaks down, the Olympic mindset takes over. I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I've traveled to 10 Olympics for Hearst Television with my partner, Mike Domolog. But Domi and I were home for the last two games because of the pandemic. But this summer, the Olympics are back in all their glory, and we're going to Paris. Fans of the stands, the full athlete experience, and it's Paris! Try the end. Join us for the backstories of how Team USA gets to the top of a podium and how you can add a little Olympic edge in your life. Well, Sergeant Maddalena, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
It's really nice to get to catch up with you. You're in Georgia right now?
I am, yes.
And so is that home base right now for work and then also for training?
It is. Yep. I'm at Fort Moore, previously Fort Benning, and that's my home station.
Yeah, very good. Well, that's a long way from Groveland, California, that's for sure.
Yes, it is.
Well, we're excited to get to talk to you. You know, this is going to be your second Olympics, and you've added a second event that you'll also be competing at this time around. Tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
So my two events, the first one is the 10-meter air rifle event. I shoot that with the 177 pellet. It's projected by air or propelled by air to a target 10 meters away. And what I'm aiming for is a period on a newspaper. It's about the size of the center of the target.
Sajan, that is crazy. Yeah. That is crazy.
Yeah. And when you look at it like in real time, like actually at a paper target, the pellets are going in the same hole. And you're doing that on your feet from the standing position. So it's very precise. Wow. Very
okay, so that's the first event. What's the second event then?
The second event is with a 22 caliber rifle. And that's at 50 meters away. We call it the 3x20 50 meter event. And so I shoot kneeling, prone, and standing in a block amount of time. A total of 60 shots, 20 shots each position. And with that, I'm aiming at the size of a thumbnail.
That's much easier.
Yeah. Right. You got the wind and the rain and the sunshine. You gotta, yeah, it's right.
Do you have, perfect vision? Like how much does that impact what you do? Do you need it?
I do have good vision. I was, blessed to be born and to have and maintain very good vision, but I know and have teammates who don't have perfect vision, but they're allowed to wear just, you know, glasses and have that lens. So we don't have optics. We can't magnify anything. Right. It's all open sights. But for those, you know, that don't have great vision, they can wear certain lenses to help them see the target more clear.
Interesting. So you could wear like contacts then.
Yeah.
They give you like 20/20.
Yes, I've never had to worry about it.
Well, you are blessed in many, many ways then.
Yes, yes.
It's so interesting. You got into this, from what I've read, by seeing a newspaper ad for 4-H.
That's
That is
it.
the most
So,
random thing ever.
right?
Yeah.
I was homeschooled growing up, so I didn't have necessarily the sports available to play. And I wanted to do a sport. Now I was into like agriculture and, livestock and horses and raising animals through 4-H. And so when that opportunity came up for gun safety, and also you get to compete and learn gun safety at the same time, I wanted to give it a try, and I fell in love with it.
Were you good right away?
No, absolutely not. Yeah, no.
What is it about it that you really liked, though? Because not only did you do it as a kid, you actually went to college in Alaska and continued in, you were on a collegiate team as well and did really, really well. And that was kind of the entree to realizing there's an actual sports career that can come out of this, in addition to what you've done with the Army, too.
Yeah. So initially, as a kid, being in that range at like 13 years old, it was like, oh man, I just want to beat the boys. Like being a girl surrounded by these, boys who are trying to shoot better than the girls and everything. It's like that was my one life focus, and I just wanted to beat the boys. But also, it's really cool just seeing the progress of just putting in practice and training. And seeing how I could go from being pretty darn bad to just the progress, I would just get better and better and better. And that kind of became addictive. Like I really enjoyed that process of making good shots and the work that went into that.
And so, at what point do you start to realize that you could actually go to the Olympics with this?
I didn't realize that until I was about 19 years old. And that's when I switched disciplines. I was shooting before that, but in a discipline that wasn't Olympic style. And so Olympic style is the same type of shooting that we do in collegiate, so NCAAs. It's air rifle and 22. And so I made that switch because my coach at the time had said, if you shoot international style rifle, you can shoot worldwide, not just within the state or the country, and you could go to the Olympics. And that was the first time I'd heard of that.
And when you say international style rifle, is that referring to the type of competition or the kind of gun?
Yeah, so that's both the type of competition and the type of how the guns are manufactured. They're very
Okay.
Well, one, you've got the precision point of it because they have to be very precise, but also the adjustability of them to fit each person just right. And because I shoot my rifle different than, say, someone else.
Yeah.
So it can be changed and adapted to that.
It's such a sport of, every sport has to be precise, right? Like, it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're a basketball player, you want the ball to go into the hoop. If you play soccer, you need to get it into the goal. If you play polo, you need to be a good passer, whatever. But your sport, like, it takes perfection to this whole new level. So I'm wondering, like, how do you train the mind to deal with that level of perfection so that you don't get too into your head, which can work against you.
Yep. So, oh man, if we had, a whole week of constant conversation, I probably couldn't get through everything. And that changes as it goes. As I have grown experience, how I change and how I train and work through my mindset has adapted.
Okay, so give us an example. Like, how do you do that?
So an example would be how I treat visualization. That's a hard word to say, but how I see myself competing, I can see myself, I can feel it, I can feel the emotions without being on the line and training real time. So that's just something I could do anywhere at any time, is just kind of close the eyes, put the body in a relaxed state through breathing exercises. And then kind of seeing myself compete, seeing myself go through different scenarios and situations, and seeing how I want to react, feeling how I want to react, and it's gaining control of my physiological kind of reactions to different thoughts that can come into my head or different things that I see.
Is that something that you're doing now, a couple months before you go to France?
It's something that I've worked on for years, and it gets fine-tuned, you know, leading up to France. You have a different range, so I like to see kind of what does that range look like, kind of what are the conditions, what am I going to kind of walk into,
right?
And it's preparing for those scenarios. But the big thing is not getting overworked in your head, kind of trying to, you know, visualize and see it all, because when you get there, it's, you got to be in the moment. You can't be in your head. You can't be thinking different things. You got to be shooting and in the moment, because it's such a, the precision of the sport and the mental focus has to be at that knife edge.
Can you think of a good real world application that somebody who's not an Olympic shooter, like how we could take that concept and apply it to our own lives or our own goal?
I've never been asked that.
Because I love what you're saying. And I'm trying to think of like, how could an average person do that in their own life? Because that's a great skill if we could master that.
Yeah, well, the visualization thing is something like, so say in college, when I was in college getting prepared for tests, like I would get nervous for that. And I learned that there were some cues that I could give myself, like quiet my mind, do some breathing exercises, kind of gain control of my body and how it's reacting before I step into the classroom to take the test. That helped calm my nerves. And what by calming those nerves, it didn't take the nerves away, but by calming your nerves, it allows you to kind of have more control of the situation without spiraling out of control.
Yeah.
You know, when you're taking a test, and you're trying to get all the answers and you're trying to throw all this knowledge from your brain onto the paper, and then you're so uptight and nervous about it, like, can you really allow your mind to produce what you've learned over time? Like, instead you might be writing stuff down that makes no sense.
Do you do a lot of work with sports psychology?
I have.
Because we're kind of delving into that a little bit. And I'm curious to know, like, how much of your training is physical? How much is pure shooting? And how much of it is that brain training that you're talking about?
Yeah. To be honest, it's turned more into experience. But leading
it's
up
very adulty, by the way.
Yeah. Leading up to this point, as a junior, as a young adult, even into my mid to late 20s, it was very mental. It was probably about 45% to 50% of my training. Even while I was training the physical aspects of it, I was still using mental techniques of keywords, seeing a good shot, keeping my energy level where I wanted it to be, that optimal zone of function, of how I perform my best. But then off the range, it was visualizing, seeing the shot, going through different scenarios in my head, doing breathing exercises where I could actually feel kind of from my toes all the way to my head to my fingertips, this relaxation, and having gaining control of the body that way through breathing exercises. And I had to train that to be able to get where I am now, to where it becomes more second nature.
Right.
You know, you get up.
That sounds a lot like, it reminds me of biathletes. Cause when you hear them say they'll ski, 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 but their heart is coming out of their chest, and then they stop and they got to shoot, but they got to lower that heart rate like that. Is there a little bit of that for you? Because I would imagine that you got to calm, be able to get that calm focus right before you start.
Yep, absolutely. And what I've found with me personally is I have to accept the fact that my heart is beating out of my chest because I'm so excited to be competing like at international levels. You know, you walk into that final, it's like, boom, 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 boom. You're like, how am I supposed to shoot when the sights are doing this? You know, it's once I learned to accept the fact that I was going to be excited and I was going to be nervous, that's what actually brought the heart rate down. you know, it didn't keep it, like, it was still there, but I wasn't thinking on it or focusing on it, because the more you think about something or focus on something, the more prominent it becomes. Yeah. So the more I was like, oh, I'm nervous, oh, my heart's beating, you know, it would just beat harder and faster. And as soon as I was like, I'm going to accept this and just do my process to take a good shot, I started thinking on the process on how to take a good shot, and the heart rate slowed. That's kind of the trick.
I was listening to a podcast the other day. It was with a neuroscientist who was giving a kind of a different take on anxiety and how, like, when we are anxious about something and you have that beating heart or that heightened awareness, it's actually excitement. And if you think about it, an anxious feeling, anxiety, excitement, that beating heart can be a great thing if you harness it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I have shot some incredible matches being at that knife edge of just so excited, so kind of just ready to be there, because I know I'm ready for it and I prepared myself for it. And that's why I'm so excited about it, is because I'm excited to see what can come out of it, you know, and to be in that situation. You know, being nervous and excited is a good thing, because it means you want to be there. You're ready for it, you know. As soon as I get to that point where I'm shooting a competition and there's no excitement, then I'll be done. I mean, that's my retirement. That's it, because that's not what I compete for. It's that excitement level, that fine-tuned knife edge, you know?
Yeah. Well, and in your other job in the Army, when you don't have that level of awareness, it's also probably a good sign that it's probably time to back up a little bit.
Yeah. Right? That's, I mean, you got to be on your toes. Not to the point that you can't control yourself. You have to be able to control yourself and be on that focus level. And that's what keeps you going. So
keeps you going, keeps you honest. When you list out all the different Olympic sports, your sport falls onto the list, I know, where people are like, I didn't know that was a sport, like that they compete that. People don't know as much about it because we probably don't see it maybe as frequently. Yep. As maybe in other parts of the world people do. When people find out you're an Olympian, what sport do they think you do?
There was this, the one time that sticks in my head is when someone was like, oh, you're an Olympian? Do you run? Are you a runner? I was like, I was so proud. I was like, yeah, no, I do not run. I work on my physique. I work on, you know, strength and endurance and being able to stabilize my muscles and stuff. But I am not, you know, you can look into a crowd and probably not think that I'm like a world-class athlete, you know, if you look into a crowd. So, yeah.
Oh, but you are. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the training. I know you're part of the Army's ambassador program, which is a great way for people to learn through watching Olympic athletes, to learn more about the Army and to see all the different kinds of things you can learn through that experience. What is the training like these days? In addition to shooting, I mean, you mentioned strength training. Are you in the gym? What does it take?
Yep. So it takes not just range time. You know, range time might only be, you know, 3 hours a day, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day, even though it's very focused, very concentrated. But there's also the training to build shoulder muscles. I'm not looking to be, you know, a muscle, you know, weight man, bodybuilder, but your muscles have to be able to, your ligaments and your body has to be able to take the ongoing and constant, I'm going to say abuse. It's not necessarily, that's not a good word for it, but of being in one position for hours at a time, you know, it takes a toll on the body and it starts to stretch out things. I've had a torn labrum, a stretched capsule in my shoulder before I was strong enough to handle the training hours and the competition hours. That was the moment that I realized, hey, I got to be physically fit if I want to continue this sport. And so I took that to heart and built my muscles up around my shoulders, my back, my hips, all of that takes a strain of, you know, standing still or being in that sling position for long periods of time.
You're an awesome shot, but what are you not good at?
Shotgun. That you put a shotgun in my hand and it's like I things that are moving, try to hit something that's moving. It's like, oh my goodness.
It totally surprises me. I would not have guessed that one.
Yeah. If it's standing still, oh yeah, it's a goner. But if it's moving, it's going to keep on moving. It'll be fine. but things like, I don't know, like golf, basketball, baseball, you know, even when I just do it for fun, I am not athletic in those ways. I try to be, but my coordination is not great.
What have you loved about the Olympic experience? I mean, I feel like, I mean, you got to go to the Tokyo Games, which wasn't exactly like, it wasn't a normal Olympics because we were all living in pandemic restrictions. Paris is going to be like, from what I can tell, a nonstop party and a little bit more of the Olympic environment. But what have you loved about just the idea of representing your country as an athlete?
Yeah. So being at the Olympics, you are surrounded by the best of the best in every country of the world. Every nook and cranny is, you know, people are coming out and they are just absolute machines at what they do. They are phenomenal people. And to be in that environment for several weeks, and you're at the dining hall with them, you're at the gym with them as they prepare to compete in their own events. They might look completely different than you, but they're there for the same purpose of, hey, we're going to win. We're going to represent our countries. And so you're surrounded by that the whole time. And it is such a unique experience. You can't have that experience any other way. And like, in Tokyo, there will never be another first Olympics. And that experience that I had was just off the charts. Yeah. To be able to be around all those amazing athletes. And it's the same coming up for the Paris Games, is I get to, you know, surround myself with the greats of the greats, you know, who are all there for that purpose of winning and competing for their country. And so I get to go there and do the same. But you know, it's like, I'm going for my country. Like, let's go win, you know?
You come from a small mountain town called Groveland. You are, to say you're the pride of Groveland is an understatement. I mean, when you got back from Japan, the whole town turned out, three of the parade, all of it. What's it like being able to represent also a small town? Because a lot of these athletes are coming from big urban areas where there were lots of opportunities. Your opportunity came from a 4-H club. At yeah. The heart of it, which is pretty cool.
It is small towns don't mean small opportunities. Like, just because you're from a small area, or you know, there's not a lot of kids in your school, or you're homeschooled and you don't even get to play sports, it doesn't mean the opportunities aren't there for you to grasp. And that's, I got the chance to grasp an opportunity through shooting, which came through 4-H with and for me, it was like, started as that dream of, hey, I get to go out and compete against the boys and try and beat the boys. And it just built and adapted over time to, I get to go compete against other people in the state and then the nation and then in the world. And it's like that drive, that motivation just continues to feed off of itself. But it all, you know, wrapped back together to just a small town. You know, it's like, having a small dream, it doesn't mean it can't come alive. And that town is fueled so much inside of me. And it's the support I get from like the neighbors and the people in town and the different restaurants. It's huge, you know?
Well, and then you also have the support of the US Army, which is pretty cool too. And there are many athletes who will be competing under the kind of that umbrella of being also US Army members as well. For the other soldiers and for other military members, why is it important for them to see all of you in that Olympic setting?
It's the teamwork that gets individuals to their individual sports. So like for me, you know, I might be going and competing in a sport that is just, it's you and the target, it's you and your equipment and the target. But to get to that level, the amount of teamwork that goes into to the fellow soldiers around me who have pushed me, who have helped me to succeed in different competitions to get me to where I am. Just the support factor I have from, you know, different people within the unit that I'm in, the section that I'm in too, and how they've contributed to this. Like when I step up onto the line, in the end, it isn't just me and my equipment and the target. It's me and everybody else who's helped. And that's those soldiers out there and those teammates and the Army Marksmanship unit that I'm a part of who have supported that whole kind of adventure that I'm on.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting to cover you in Paris this summer, and I wish you the best of luck here for the next couple of months. What are some good ways for people to keep up with your adventure and journey as you head toward Paris?
You mean like social media and stuff?
Sure.
You know, I do have social media. People are telling me I'm a grandma by having Facebook, but I have Facebook and I have Instagram. And I think, but I don't get too wrapped up in that, to be honest. I just love living in the moment. You know, I'll post stuff.
Okay. So I'm going to challenge you because I did, okay, as we were chatting, I did make sure that you had Instagram before I asked you that question. And you do. But here's what I'm going to tell you. There's going to be that next group of girls in places like Groveland, and they're not going to go to the newspaper for the 4-H ad, but they are going to go look at your Instagram.
Okay.
And they're going to see, what did Sajan do to get there? And that is how they're going to find out about those opportunities. So,
oh, I love it. All
so
right.
I will push people toward that Instagram because you have some really cool pictures and you do explain about the sport. It's utterly fascinating.
Okay. Awesome. I'll get back on it a little bit more often then.
Okay. Facebook. I don't know. I do think it's kind of,
oh man.
You know what? I think Instagram. Okay. I think that's where the next agent's going to come from. It's probably looking there and getting curious and motivated by what they see you do this summer.
Awesome.
All right. Hey, best of luck this year.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find our podcast, Dying to Ask, The Road to Paris, wherever podcasts are found. We're hearing from athletes and experts ahead of the games.